through the Alaska Airlines studios.
This is Jake and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Ross.
We are taking you around the diamond thanks to the Shane Company, your friend in the jewelry business. The Mariners and Justice Sheffield open another series on the road, this time against the Baltimore Orioles. Pre-game starts at 3 p.m., first pitch at 4:05 p.m. right here on 710 ESPN Seattle. And that's Around the Diamond, brought to you by the Shane Company, your friend in the jewelry business. You guys, I am shocked right now. Like, literally, I am floored. I get so many texts on the text line, so many tweets and complaints from listeners that we don't take enough calls. Like, as a station, but like as a show. You guys don't take enough calls. You don't open up the phone lines. There are two, like, we have four open lines right now. Four open lines, and you guys aren't calling in. So you talk a big game about how you want to call in and you want to sound off and you care about sports. I am talking about the biggest villain in the history of Seattle sports, athlete-wise, certainly one of them, with Alex Rodriguez. I'm talking about a team that was stolen from us, and you're hoping you can get a chance back. And I have four open phone lines? What's going on? Are you sports fans or not? Call in. What are you doing? 866-979-3776 or 206-421-3776. Better walk it if you're going to talk it. That's all I'm saying. Go into line one. Christian in the 206. Christian, you're awesome. Thank you for calling in. Christian, are you burying the hatchet with Alex Rodriguez if he brings back the Sonics? Do you think the Sonics are coming back? I mean, tell us how you feel here.
Hey, happy Monday morning to you
guys. Happy Monday.
What hatchet are we talking about? We're not talking about any hatchet. I'm going to go get on eBay ASAP. If he gets this done, and I'm getting myself an A-Rod jersey, and I'm about to make it happen if he makes the Sonics come back to Seattle. You know that.
I love it. Yeah. I love it. Absolutely right, Christian. 1,000%. You know what, Christian? I was seeing you on the text line too, because you sign. Obviously, we know you. You sign off with your name. We always know it's you. And I saw you being like, you know what? I don't care if it's taken from another team. I'm okay with it. And I can completely see that argument. Like, if it's Seattle has had so much bad happen to it as a sports city, mostly with the Sonics, that like maybe that's karma in your favor. Maybe you should recognize an opportunity and take it.
Exactly. Life is all about opportunities, folks. And right now, you may have an opportunity, this area, to get a team here. However you get it, as long as no one's hurt in the process, I think you take it. So I'm with them, man. You bring that energy. I think a lot of people feel like that, but they don't want to say it. You know, because they feel like they're betraying their Mariners or the culture or whatnot. Man, forget all that noise. You want a basketball team? However you got to get it, as long as no one's hurt, go ahead and bring a team here.
Okay, says the guy from L.A.
Snatch him.
Go into line two. We have Jesse and Burien. Jesse, you burying that hatchet with A-Rod if he brings the Sonics back to Seattle?
I am so glad you asked, and no way.
No!
I appreciate what everything Christian said. I am grateful for that insight, but I gotta tell you, maybe A-Rod could have put a team all the money we threw out on that Safeco Field when he came back, all right? So I'm just telling this guy right now, like, A-Rod would be one of those guys. I could see if he brought them back, he would, like, somehow hold that over Seattle. I don't know if that's true or not, but, like, he would kind of come in with this, like, righteous, like, look what I did, Seattle, now you should love me again. And don't get me wrong, I want the Sonics back so bad. I don't understand why Bezos hasn't made it happen yet when he could just write a check and get it done tomorrow. I don't understand it. But I'll just say, if it was for anyone, like if it was because he left for the money, I can't be mad at an athlete for leaving an area to go get paid. You know, we see it all the time. But like it was all the scumminess that came with it after he left too. Just like suspension after suspension, all these things. When you're in the league with Cal Ripken and Derek Jeter and all these guys that were just like notoriously great men on and off the field, and then you get A-Rod, like, no, I'm sorry, I can't bury that hatchet. Not representing our team either. I would not want that.
This is Jesse, right?
Jesse.
Yeah.
That was Jesse. Jesse, you crazy, man. You are crazy. I guarantee you, if a team comes here, you're going to buy your jerseys, you're going to watch the game. You know what? You might fight it for a year or two. Like when I stopped playing football, I couldn't watch football for a year or two. But then eventually, fantasy football gets gone, and you start investing in college players. You're gonna find your way back. So I appreciate you standing strong and representing for all the people who don't want it. But I guarantee you, Jesse, If the team is here, you will be watching those games. You might even buy a jersey.
I would rep the Sonics hard. I'd do that. I just can't see him in the owner's box and stuff. I would not feel good about that.
But if you're gonna accept the team, you gotta accept A-Rod as well, right? It's America. People do worse things and people forgive them, right? All he did was take some money and take some PEDs and influence his career, you know?
Over and over.
I know. All he did was lie about it. No big deal. Jesse, you're awesome. Thank you for calling in. I don't think you're alone here. We're going to line five, Mallow and Bremerton. Mallow, I hope I said that right. You can correct me if I'm wrong. Mallow, would you bury the hatchet with A-Rod if he brought back the Sonics?
Well, what's up, team? Happy to be on with you guys. I listen to you every morning. And I'll say this, a big, strong H to the no. I'll tell you why. The last thing we need is more controversy surrounding any Seattle team. You know, A-Rod, man, the way he left, bad taste in a lot of people's mouths. I don't think a lot of people really appreciated that. But his business dealings are a little bit seedy up until of recent news. I don't know if a lot of people are aware of some of the real estate investments and things that he's gotten involved with and old partnerships. And so, honestly, I think, guys, this is a great topic to discuss. It's fun, but I think it's a non-story. Ultimately, I wouldn't be surprised if the deal falls through just based on some of the misdealings he's currently involved in.
Milo saying, I don't want any of that messiness.
Okay.
That just sounds messy to me. And also, we already know that this team probably isn't coming here. There's probably language in the deal, which they're still finalizing, by the way, that says that this team isn't coming to Seattle. But pointing out a great point that, like, if it did come to Seattle and if that did happen, like, do you want to be associated with something that's kind of sticky?
It's sticky. Man, it's business. It's business. Some business deals go through, some don't. Some are squeaky clean, some are a little shady. At this point, and you know, I wasn't raised here. I didn't grow up here, but I've been here for 16 years now. And I'm at the point to where I'm like, I don't care how this team gets here. A team just needs to come out here and play. A team needs to represent Seattle. So I understand where people, how A-Rod is viewed. He doesn't seem like a genuine guy. Kind of seems like a sleazeball. I guarantee you, I do a lot of business with a lot of men. There's a lot of sleazeballs out there, folks. The person driving next to you on the highway right now could be a sleazeball, but as long as they stay in their lane, you don't have to worry about them. So as long as A-Rod comes here, if this happens, makes this happen, and just doesn't throw shade on the whole organization, I think people can and will get over it.
Going to line six, Rob in American Samoa, would you bury the hatchet with A-Rod if he brought back the Sonics?
It would be really difficult for me to bury the hatchet with that guy. I am a hardcore Sonics fan. I was 12 years old. My folks let me skip school to go to the parade.
Nice.
I would need a lot of showers if he was our team owner. I mean, you don't want to be like a Dallas Cowboys and have Jerry Jones as your owner. And I don't think you want A-Rod as your owner.
Oh, man. You guys are so sensitive, man.
Yeah, it's because you're used to stealing
sensitive.
Teams.
Yeah, just get used to it. That's life. That's how this thing works. You snatch teams, man. You get them however you can. And I think A-Rod would come back to the Northwest, and he'd be humble. I'm going to say he just lost J-Lo, right? Just lost probably.
He lost J-Lo because he messed up, but we don't need to spend time on it.
All right, we're not going to go there. But I feel like he's been humbled. I don't see the same A-Rod I saw 10 years ago. So I'm going to give the guy a chance.
Okay. Let's see. Going to line three, Jeff in SeaTac, my hometown. Jeff, would you bury the hatchet with A-Rod if he brought back the Sonics?
Yes, I would bury that hatchet very, very far down in the center of the earth and forget it ever existed. As far as feeling guilty about taking a team from Minnesota, I mean, they've been a very bad team ever since they pretty much came into the league. Very limited playoff appearances. I mean, and that coming from a Mariners fan, like, if a city came and took the Mariners at this point, it would suck, but I mean, I would kind of understand. So that's basically my stance on that.
Completely fair, Jeff. Saying, like, yeah, I would easily bury that. Like, look, it happens. And not only that, but very important to mention, you would get the Sonics back. Is that the part that we're missing
here?
That's all that matters.
I don't care how they get here.
All right. Let's see. Going to, oh, my gosh. Now we got full lines. I love you guys. Line number one, Joe in Burien. Joe, how are you feeling about A-Rod? We know that it might not happen. We know that the chances are low. But hello, one of the biggest sports villains in Seattle history now tied to the ownership of a team that is in trouble. Would you bury the hatchet with A-Rod if he brought back the Sonics, Joe and Burian?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think I'd bury the hatchet, but I want the team back by any means necessary. So if that's A-Rod and it happens, great. I want the Sonics back. But my opinion on who A-Rod is not going to change. The reason people don't like A-Rod is because he's so thirsty to be liked. So he'll say anything that he thinks is going to make people like him. So the reason that he would bring back the team to Seattle is not because he cares about Seattle. He cares about his image in Seattle. I can separate the two. I can love that the Sonics are back by any means necessary while still not liking A-Rod. I hate the Mariners' ownership, but I still root for the Mariners.
You know, Joe, you sound like a logical human being. You don't have to agree with all the extra stuff. What's the main goal? Get the team back. I like your energy. You're keeping your emotions out of it. You can't make business deals off of emotions. If you make business deals off of emotions, exactly, you're gonna find yourself in some sticky situations. So I like where your head is at.
Thank you, Joe. And hear me out to Joe's point, too. Like, first of all, how many owners could the average fan of any league name? Right? Like, I cover sports for a living, and I don't know that I could name every team owner of every team.
Nope.
Quite a few of them, not every owner. And secondly, I dislike the vast majority of those people. No one's going to be best friends with a billionaire. What are you talking about? Mike in Georgia. Wow, wait. All the way out in Georgia?
All the way out in Georgia.
Are you a Mariners fan? How'd you get there? Are you burying the hatchet with A-Rod if he brings back the Sonics?
Okay, first of all, I'm a truck driver, so I'm all over the world.
Love it.
Second of all, I wouldn't just bury the hatchet. I would bury the hatchet at the half-court line when the Sonics come back. Unless A-Rod decided to change the colors, but try to bring it back to the old-school colors.
Okay.
All right.
And then
fair.
I probably would have a problem.
Completely fair. Completely fair. Mike in Georgia. Thank you, Mike, for calling in. Let's see. Let's go to Chris in Spanaway. Line five. Could you bury the hatchet with A-Rod? Biggest sports villain in Seattle history. Certainly one of them. If he brought back the NBA to Seattle.
Absolutely. Yeah, I'd bury it. I mean, I'm not one to hold grudges. Sure, I was mad at him and all that for all that, but I can't blame him for taking money. I mean, if he wants to bring back the Sonics, cool. As mad as I was at Howard Schultz, I was still drinking Starbucks coffee. You know what I mean?
And I'm with you.
I still see a lot of Sonics fans drinking Starbucks coffee. So why not, man? Bring them back.
All right, Chris saying, oh, it's been long enough. You get over things. You move on. You get past it. That's actually where I fall, Chris. Like, to be completely honest, I love that there are people that are still passionate enough that still, like, feel one way over the other. For me, I'm like, I can get over it. Yeah. I got over hating Starbucks. I can get over this.
I'm the same way. And I've heard people bring up the PED deal. Say he signs with the Mariners and he goes through his PEDs. I guarantee you, you're not throwing him under the bus like people are now. They might be disappointed. Oh, I can't believe he did that. But because he left and he got caught up, people are using that argument against him. Who's to say he wasn't using them while he was in Seattle?
A-Rod using PED. I mean,
well, hey, now, Bob.
Okay, you need to calm
this
down.
This is an organization.
We're a respectful organization. We would never stand for that. Please, sir, you need to calm down. That's an asinine implication. Last caller going to line three, Isaiah in Yakima. Isaiah, could you bury the hatchet with A-Rod, who never did PEDs in Seattle, if he brought back the Sonics?
Yeah, I could, because I wasn't burnt by him leaving. I mean, he was there at a time at a young age when Randy Johnson got traded because he was too old, and he went on to win a Cy Young in a World Series. Griffey got pretty much let go and then came back, so... If he brings the Sonics back, it's all good. And the PED thing, when people are heard about that, those are the same people who cry about players who make $250 million and some odd dollars just to step into the batter's box, you know? So everyone has decisions they got to make. He made his, but if he brings the Sonics back, everyone's going to be happy. Like that last caller said, people who hate Howard Schultz still go to Starbucks and get their coffees from there. So
all right,
it is what it is.
Thank you, Isaiah. You guys, Isaiah had some just low-key fire takes. He delivered it in a low-key way, but
sure
he was
did.
Like, hey, I mean, the same person saying this, you're just a hater. The same people complaining.
Big ups, Yakima. Right, way to represent out there, baby.
All right. It is 12:15. That means it's time for Four Down Territory, brought to you by Genuine Auto Glass.
This is Four Down Territory, brought to you by Genuine Auto Glass.
With Jake and Stacy.
You live for moments like this. Time for us to step up and take it.
Big ups to the callers. They really brought it.
They really did. You guys were phenomenal. Yeah. Each and every one of you. Thank you.
Bump, first down to you. What do you make of the NFLPA urging players not to show up for in-person team activities?
I think it's ridiculous. Yeah, it reminds me of, I want to say, the movie Braveheart. It might have been Braveheart. Some war movie where I say war is just like young men dying and old men making decisions. That's pretty much what's happening here. You got the old guys in NFLPA who are making these decisions like, hey, don't show up. Don't show up. If guys don't show up, they don't get a chance to be seen. If I'm a Russell Wilson or even a DK Metcalf at this point, I'm established. I'm not worried about showing up to these little deals. Now, the undrafted free agent guys or the guys who are on the bubble, they have to show up to these things to get these coaches to trust them. So these veterans are saying, look, don't show up. That means I don't have to worry about my job being taken. I can spend more time with my family, going on my vacations, doing what I have to do. Meanwhile, you're only going to have 3 or 4 weeks to prove that you can make this ball club. I just don't like it. I snuck in the league through the back door because I went to these things and I got these coaches to trust me. So I'm not about it. These young guys coming in the league, they're not under that union. You go ahead and you show up, you get your little checks, and you get in front of these coaches and make sure that they know you can ball.
Second down. Stacy.
Someone said Alan Ording. Yes, I will bury the hatchet right in his traitorous back.
Whoa.
A little aggressive.
Okay, Al.
Ording. Hot in those streets.
Yeah, for real.
It's also hot on the Jadeveon Clowney rumor mill. Looks like Cleveland could be in the lead for his services, Stacy. You were campaigning for him to
come back
to Seattle.
I sure was.
Do you think the Seahawks are missing out on a great opportunity?
I was campaigning for him to be back in Seattle before the Seahawks brought back Carlos Dunlap and Benson Mayoa. They combined for 11 sacks, and you are going to be missing the bulk of your sack totals from your defensive line, and that obviously excludes Jamal Adams, who's still there, but I was looking at only defensive linemen. I was worried about what they would have, and I was like, guys, look, Benson Mayoa had 6 sacks. He's not a big name, so people kind of, you know, forget. Everyone was watching Clowney when he was signed. Benson Mayoa had a really productive year. And I thought, Jadeveon Clowney, he's going to have a high ceiling. He can be really disruptive. And he's coming off an injury in a less than stellar year, which makes him way more affordable than the season prior when we were all on Clowney watch thinking, oh, he's going from 20 to 19 to $17 million a year. But now I think Seahawks fans can be okay with it. I think if he goes to Cleveland, you just say, good for you, Clowney, for finding a spot and getting paid. I think we've got our group.
Third down. Bump, make the case for Freddie Swain to be Seattle's third wide receiver.
Freddie Swain can be Seattle's third receiver simply because he knows all the positions out there when it comes to catching a rock. The first thing you have to do as a receiver, as an athlete, like I just mentioned, is to get coaches to trust you. And I heard Pete Carroll talk about this guy. He can play any position. He's ready to go. Now, two, he had an okay season. 21 targets, 13 catches, 159 yards, 2 touchdowns. And that's with being like the fourth, maybe even fifth receiver at times. Imagine what this guy can do if he's actually the number three receiver. Now, he's going to have some competition. Gerald Everett could be a number three receiver. He can line up anywhere. And we'll see what they do in the draft. But Freddie Swain has shown that he can catch the ball in traffic. He has good run after the catch. And he has a nose for the end zone. He has 2 touchdowns on 13 catches. If they don't draft the receiver, bring somebody in, you give Freddie a chance to see what happens. I'm also going to throw John Ursua in there. I'm still waiting to see him on the field.
Text line going nuts after that John Ursua drop.
The text line fourth. Loving John Ursua is my favorite thing.
Fourth down. Find someone that loves you the way the text line loves.
It's impossible. John Ursua. It's impossible. It's like the love of a mother for her children. It's knows no bounds.
Bump, fourth down to you. What stat will improve and what stat will decline for Russell Wilson in 2021?
The stat that's going to improve in 2021, completion percentage. He's never thrown for 70% in a year. I believe Breeze has done it 7 times. Brady has never done it. Rodgers has done it twice. I think that's another goal for him to reach. I think with this offense, the way Shane Waldron calls things, he's going to get the ball out quicker, friendly throws. Now, the stat that's going to decline, I'm going to say touchdown passes. I just think it's going to go down. I think it's going to hover around 30 this year. I think they're going to be more efficient. They are going to run the rock. Doesn't mean they're going to be a run-only team, but they're going to mix it up and take some pressure off of him to make the big play every single time, which just means this is going to be a more balanced offense. I think Russell's going to have a great year.
It still offends me, like, to the core of my being that Drew Brees never got MVP.
Crazy.
Because when you said Aaron Rodgers did it twice, I immediately thought, I bet it was MVP years. Mm-hmm. I bet that's when it happened. How? Now I have one question for me, one question from the text line. First one for you, Curtis, this is from the text line. From the 509, been gone a few days. Have you guys beat the Capri Sun record yet? I'm so glad you asked, 509, because Curtis has not. He's not been trying. He's not been working hard. But you know who did beat Curtis's record without even trying? First try? DJ Wilder.
Well, you know
producer.
What? That's some pretty broad accusations on your part. You know who got a box of Pacific Cooler Capri Sun as a gift from his sister on his birthday over the weekend?
Oh my God, really?
That'd be your boy.
Oh, I love it. Did they make you try to chug one?
No, not yet. But, I mean, we've got the pack of Capri Sun in the fridge. There's still probably about 8 left.
And we got some in the sports pit from, I think, Adam, who sent us some.
Yeah, listener Adam. Shout out to him.
Shout out, Adam.
So, who's... You don't know me outside of the station,
okay,
Stacey.
Curtis. Okay.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah,
wow.
Sure. Just if anyone wants to troll Curtis, if you can beat 18.6 seconds, you have to start.
16.6 is the record.
16.6 is the world record that we're trying to beat. Curtis got 18.6. You have to start with the Capri Sun with the straw attached.
Okay.
And Curtis started with it technically on the table. He wasn't touching it. So you reach out, obviously, you take off the straw. You have to put the straw through the top of the Capri Sun and drink the entire Capri Sun through the straw.
Okay. I was going to say 16 seconds. I'm like, man, but now it makes sense. You have to take the
straw's
straw.
Straw's the toughest part.
Oh, Bump, if you want to try it, we have some here.
I'm in. Let's do it.
Last question. This one from me for Bump, because we got an interesting story coming up in the timeline. If you could have a movie about your life, who would portray you?
Oh, who would portray me in my movie? I would, you know what? I'd go back and say Ray Allen. I'd say Ray Allen. Yeah, like young Ray Allen, mm-hmm. because I just loved him and he got game. Jesus Shuttlesworth. Like, he wasn't a great actor. Like, you can tell, like, this isn't what he does.
Right.
But
still,
I still believed him. You know, I'm like, oh, yeah, okay. So, yeah, I'd go with Ray Allen. I used to like him growing up. He was my second favorite basketball player growing up. And just a good dude. I'd go Ray Allen.
I like that. I would probably go with maybe Beyonce, Knowles Carter, Jessica Alba, someone that, you know.
Yeah, definitely.
Beautiful,
yeah.
Talented. Accomplished, but who am I? Now, there's someone portraying Saints head coach Sean Payton in a movie that's coming out about his year-long suspension. I don't know how I feel about this casting choice. I don't know how I feel. I'll tell you who it is next, plus one of the weirdest college football stories I've ever heard. That's next in the timeline.
This is The Timeline
with Jake and Stacey.
Brought to you by 1-800-DUIOA.
It's The Timeline on Jake and Stacey. No Jake today. He's on vacation with the rest of the Heaps fam. Instead, we have Michael Bumpus. Your favorite, by the way. Every time we have you on for anything, even interviews, people are always like, I love Bump. So now you guys get him for an entire week, pretty much.
Well,
here
thanks,
with you.
Guys. I love you, too.
Of course. So let's go ahead and get started. Now, I asked you, Bump, if you were to be portrayed in a movie by an actor, who you would want to portray you. And you said?
I said Ray Allen. I guess he's an athlete, but he's acted. But
right.
Someone threw something else out there on the text lines, which I can always get with. Denzel,
man. I saw that. Who would say no?
You can't say no to Denzel.
Who would say no? Now, there is an actor that will be portraying Saints head coach Sean Payton. So there's a Netflix movie coming out. Peter King revealed this in his Football Morning in America column this morning. So it's going to be a Netflix original. It's about 2012, the year that Payton was suspended, obviously, from the league for his role in Bountygate. And during that time, he coached his son's sixth grade football team. So this movie, which will be called The Home Team, is going to be starring as Sean Payton, Kevin James, Paul Blart,
Mall Cop. Is this going to be a comedy, Stacey?
That's what I don't get, because I cannot see Paul Blart in a dramatic role. It has to be a comedy. If it's a Netflix original about him coaching a team of sixth graders, automatically I'm thinking he's going to be like all cylinders ago, really, really tough, and he's going to have to learn to be like kinder because he's working with kids, and then it's going to be this like underdog movie. That's
coming
how I'm imagining
age tale.
It. Yeah, it's a coming-of-age tale where he's going to be this like NFL coach that has to learn that he's not talking to adults anymore. That's what I'm imagining.
Yeah, that's how I see it. I see a lot of giggles. In that movie.
I would have loved it if instead of coaching his son's football team, not that I'm sure that was a fantastic experience, a father son bonding moment. I would have loved if he instead did become a mall cop, because then if Sean Payton became a mall cop, this would be the perfect role, the perfect casting. And not only that, but like, what would Sean Payton be like as a mall cop?
I think that's the sequel.
I think he'd be really intense. Now, this story is one of the weirder ones I've ever heard. So USC in spring practice right now, obviously, college football in spring practice right now. And because it's COVID times, normally they have fingerprint scanners if you're on the football team and you're getting into, you know, the indoor workout area or lunch area or whatever. But because it's COVID, they've been trying not to do so much hands-on stuff. So sometimes these doors are propped open. Someone used that to his advantage, and that someone is a homeless man who presumably looked like he could have been one of the students who snuck into practice because doors were propped open. But not just that. He didn't just sneak in. No. He ate with the team, got dressed, like got a uniform, and fielded punts before somebody noticed.
One, good for you.
Right?
As long as your intentions were not to harm anybody, good for you. You got a free meal. You got some USC issue. And what does that say about the homeless guy? He must have been in some good shape.
That's what I'm saying.
You just can't walk into a football locker room and not look like you do something for the football team. So good for him. Got a free meal. Got some jerseys. Filled with punts. Probably lived out a dream, honestly.
I like to think so. Well, and the weirdest part about this is like, you kind of, I don't know if empathize is the right word, but you identify, relate to that feeling of when you're going through a lie long enough and then you think like, I'm pushing it.
But at some point you're like, I got to keep going with this just to see how far.
You have to keep going, but everyone knows the point at which the lie becomes too obvious. For him, it was fielding punts. And that's what one of the security guards said in an interview where it was published for, I think maybe if not the school's newspaper, like a local outlet that was like, they figured it out once he was fielding punts. And they were like, who is this dude? Like,
this guy's form is terrible.
Yeah, this guy can't catch anything.
And why is he fielding punts? That's like the hardest thing to do. Go do something else, man.
I'm telling you guys, fielding punts, I've never been able to do it in my entire life. It is so much harder than you think it is. We had a jugs machine at this fundraiser community event I was doing that was all football themed. It was Doug Baldwin was hosting it. It was like his football themed combine, essentially. And it was all raising money for this community center in Renton. And one of the stops was basically you're fielding punts. No one caught it, and I didn't mean to laugh, but it did hit one kid who landed on his butt, and I laughed. It's like the force of it. It was like a movie, like a comedy movie where he's like, you know, lurched back. It was funny. He was fine.
I wonder if he wore like a face mask with a dark visor on it, mm-hmm. so that no one could see him while he's out there.
He got a helmet?
Like, yeah,
he got suited up.
The whole thing.
I'm thinking spring ball, maybe just shirts and shorts. No, this guy got a helmet and everything.
Yeah, now, pads, all that.
This from the text line, and I actually agree with it. 360, now that sounds like a better Netflix movie.
Yes, absolutely.
Absolutely right. Last story here. Padres pitcher Joe Musgrove told the media he needed to go to the bathroom in the fourth inning of his no-hitter, but he held it the rest of the game because he didn't want to jinx himself. We all know how much fear we all have as sports fans, particularly baseball fans, about jinxing. You never talk about a no-hitter. You never talk about a perfect game. You never say anything. You talk your way around it. So obviously, Joe doesn't want to ruin it. So first, cut eight. Let's take you back. Here's the final out of that no-hitter.
No balls in one strike. The big right-hander ready and delivers. Swing and a ground ball to shortstop. Kim has it. Friendly hop. Throw to first. That is a no-hitter, and that is history. Joe Musgrove with the first no-hitter in Padre history. April 9th, 2021 at Globe Life Field in Arlington, Texas.
And cut number nine, here's Joe taking us back through his own mindset.
I think I went through 11 or 12 water bottles tonight, and I always keep them empty ones next to me so I can kind of keep track of how many I'm drinking throughout the game. And I had to so bad in like the fourth or fifth inning, but I couldn't. That was the one thing I didn't want to break, like the superstition of it. Didn't want me to have to go, you know, use the bathroom in the middle of the start.
Bump, have you ever been in a moment like that?
No, I've never been in that moment. But I've been in those moments like out in the yard or something like that where I'm doing something with the kids, but never in a game. I would like to think as soon as he's on the mound, he's not thinking about it. It goes away. But, you know, it's like once you start thinking about it, it's like mm-hmm. almost when mm-hmm. you have to use the restroom, you get closer to your house, you're like, oh, my God.
Now you really got to go.
So I picture him walking to the dugout and having to fight that. And he fought it for what? Four, how many more innings? Three more innings?
Yeah.
Five more innings.
Five more innings? Goodness gracious.
And threw a no-hitter. It's and not even like his form was lost. Like he just, because that, was it a walk he had early? Something happened in like the third or fourth. So that was before any of this. So it's almost like he got better. Maybe this is what he needs to be doing from now on.
But then you run the risk of like kidney infection, you know,
what
if you hold it for
happens.
Too long.
It's worth
That's
it.
That's not good.
I have
a quick story if
yes,
you guys let me.
Absolutely.
One of my teammates, I'm not going to put him out there at Washington State University. We're playing Oregon State, and he's like, Bump, I got to go.
No,
I'm like, man, I don't know. Just run out there. I mean, go to the restroom. Go to the locker room. He goes, no, I don't want to lose any reps. He goes, Bump, I did it. I looked to the side.
Oh.
The man went on himself, and you have to tackle this guy.
So
I'm not gonna put you out there.
Or is he the smartest man in the room knowing that? Like, he looks at the other guy and he's like, so that you know, just be aware. All right, coming up next, with only three draft picks, should the Seahawks draft for need or best available? You can join the conversation. 710-710. We'll talk that next.
You're listening to Jake and Stacey,
powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacey Rost.
This hour of Jake and Stacey is brought to you by the Pro Club. Michael Bumpus, and for Jake Heaps today, I'm Stacey Rost, and we're going to talk about the draft a little bit. Now, I don't think either of us actually expect, and nor do you, Curtis, that the Seahawks will stay with three picks. Do you?
They're gonna make some happen.
Absolutely. So they may not be picking at 56 overall. And coming up in about 15 minutes, we're going to be previewing someone they could potentially take at 56 overall. Before they do any of that, though, let's talk about a broader question, which is, with only three picks, should the Seahawks draft for need or take best available?
What's their need? I honestly look at the team and I'm like, okay, O-line's good. D-line seems to be fine. Linebacker, we'll see what happens with KJ. Secondary is good. Receiver core is good. So I don't necessarily think they have a need. I think it's all for depth right now. And but I think it's you take who's available, the best player available. And, you know, I mentioned earlier that I think it was on the Gallant Hour that I think they might take a receiver with that pick if the receiver is the best player available. But I think it doesn't matter. I think they're set everywhere. You take the top name on that board. And just pay them.
I mean, you're right. There could be an intersection where you have a need. For instance, cornerback, wide receiver three, offensive line, I would say are three of their needs heading into this. Offensive line is a little less so now that you've shorted up. You need to figure out wide receiver three. Your cornerback is going to be your weakest position group as a whole. And then maybe you want some D-line depth in there, whatever it may be. Now, like you're saying, Bump, there could be a crossover there. You need wide receiver three, and here's a great guy for you that can be a downfield threat or whatever that's fallen into the second round right where you want to take him. I think what I don't want to see Seattle do is say, you know, oh, well, Russell Wilson needs offensive linemen. We got to think about where Dwayne Brown's going. Here's a guy we're going to take at 56 that's like 40 picks ahead of where we would actually take him because we need him. I don't want to see that.
No, and You have to think this situation is going to change pick by pick. They're going to have their board up there of possible picks, guys that they want. Guys are going to be taken off the board. They're going to be moved around. So it's a fluid situation when it comes to this draft deal. And I've learned to trust whatever these guys do. Even if I don't necessarily agree with it, I've learned to trust it because I've been in the background or, you know, behind the scenes and seen, man, the hours that they put in watching film. That's why people who come on criticizing the coaches for every move and every pick. I'm like, bro, did you watch film? Did you scout this guy or that guy? You might not agree with it, but you have to know that it's coming from a place of knowledge. They're not just shooting from the hip. Like, all right, who's up there? It's not like us during fantasy football where we're just looking at our little cheat sheet and like, all right, who's available? They're actually putting in work to find the best fit.
And I think I've definitely critiqued them before with the offensive line selections. What I will give them is that those selections outside of Afedi, Posick in the second round or whatever, a lot of them have been fifth round, sixth round, seventh round. You're taking guys for depth. It's okay if they don't become a starter because you didn't have a first round pick to take Dwayne Brown. That was the Texans that, you know, like you don't have those picks. So is there any position you don't want to see them take?
Quarterback.
I was just going to say, get a quarterback. That's on the text line saying, how are you going to feel if they take a quarterback?
That's the last thing you want to do. Russell's already been in his feelings for the past few months. You get a quarterback? Could you imagine? It'd be Aaron Rodgers all over again. You pick Jordan Love. At least don't trade up to get a quarterback. I just think you stay away from that. You stick with a veteran. You bring a veteran in, a guy who's been there, who's done that, because knock on wood, Russell Wilson's going to be available to play ball. He's been consistent as far as showing up on Sundays, being ready to go. Do not pick a quarterback and start this drama up all over again.
Well, and it's going to be drama that, like, if we're all honest with ourselves, we're going to be like, so what? They took a quarterback with, like, a sixth-round pick or seventh-round pick. They have one of the two. Maybe they don't have a six, but... So you have a quarterback with a seventh rounder. Like, he's not going to be in there competing with Russ, but now you've started a narrative that has no basis to it. It's just the story. Like, you created the story by drafting him. You didn't find an answer. It'd be more interesting if it was like you trade up, you're in the first round, you take a guy that could be your guy of the future. Now we're talking. Now you got a quarterback controversy. You need to find a backup. Geno Smith is a free agent. Mm-hmm. There are so many ways to do that without creating a story.
Yeah, I mean, if you pick a quarterback with your last pick in the draft, you're right. It just doesn't hold the same weight as if you trading up to get a quarterback or even taking them with their first pick, which is what, the 56th mm-hmm. pick, I believe, in mm-hmm. the draft. I think if you do that, man, it has to be a low-key pick, a guy who isn't on anyone's radar, really. But just to stop all the drama, don't even touch it. Don't get a quarterback. Just get a veteran.
Someone saying, I like this question, even though I know it's not what you were saying, but it's a cool conversation. Saying the Hawks have no needs must mean that Bump thinks they're Super Bowl competitive today. A great question, a great point from Fred in Birch Bay. What I heard is they don't have any glaring holes, mm-hmm. but do you think they can be Super Bowl contenders this year with some small moves then?
I think they can. I think they are Super Bowl competitive right now. Yes, as long as you have Russell Wilson, as long as you have Chris Carson, as long as you have this offensive personnel, I think that they are contenders combined with signing Dunlap, getting Kerry on board, keeping Jamal Adams. You look at the roster, like, yeah, they should be competitive. Now, are they true contenders? That's a week-by-week type thing. Guys get injured. Guys don't perform like you expect them to. So, yes, but you can always improve positions. Doesn't necessarily mean that you're bringing in a guy to start. It's like, look, I'm bringing in a guy to add depth to compete for a spot. So that's what I mean. I don't mean like, look, they don't need anybody. They're good to go right now. I think that you look at the starters on paper right now, these guys can compete with the best.
I agree. And they have enough big pieces where you think Jamal Adams, that's the difference. Bobby Wagner, Russell Wilson, DK Metcalf, those are difference makers where you look at those guys and you say that takes you from contender to Super Bowl. There are other pieces you're missing. I would wager that one of the biggest pieces is off the field, that one of the biggest pieces is communication, getting on the same page, mm-hmm. making sure the chemistry is okay. I mean, you have a brand new offensive coordinator. You have a quarterback who seemingly is frustrated with however the offense was playing, whether it's not being protected, whether it's feeling like they ran into too many walls, whatever it is. You have a running back that probably wants to be utilized more, that got back-to-back seasons of 1,000 yards and then didn't, and probably felt like he could be out there and he could contribute more, particularly when you are running into a wall with your pass game. You got a lot of guys that are going to want to make sure they can contribute and probably feel frustrated. You had at times what seemed like an offensive coordinator and a head coach that felt differently in fourth down situations about what should happen, and it cost them, whether it cost them time, penalties, whatever it was, a game potentially. When you look at that final game against the Rams, there's some stuff off the field. And if I were to choose, is it on the field changes or off the field changes that are the difference between the Seahawks being a contender and a Super Bowl team? It's the off the field changes.
Yeah. You got to think, Stace, right? At one point, the Hawks had the best offense in the league.
Yes.
Towards the end of the year, they had one of the best defenses in the league. So that, what changes? Like you just mentioned, the stuff off the field. What do? You bring in an offensive coordinator to kind of switch things up so you don't stall out. Defensively, you don't have to do anything. They ended on a great note. If roles were reversed and defense starts hot and then they fizzle mm-hmm. out, then you bring somebody in. So, yeah, it's about filling in the gaps at this point. And like you said, the gaps could be moves off the field. And that's why I'm excited about Shane. Some texter wrote him, what's so great about Shane Waldron? I'm like, look at that Rams offense and then come holler at me. Just the way that they get Goff outside the pocket, the concepts that get the ball out of Russell's hands quickly, that's what gets me optimistic about this offense. So I'm with you. Little tweaks, personnel, off the field stuff.
All right. We got a lot coming up in the final hour of our show before you guys tune in to the Mariners pregame show. We got a free agent running back making a visit in the NFC West. You got some Clowney updates. That all coming up in NFL headlines. Before we get to any of that, though, before we get to any of it, we have another draft prospect profile looking at the defensive line with this one and keeping it local. That's next.